So, Jenny asked us to come along this evening and talk about the future of work because Richard and Ollie have goggles, we have people. Okay, it's a different focus. But we have a lot of work going on here in relation to employment, in relation to careers, in relation to work. And Jenny said, come and talk about the future of work. And we sort of went, the future of work. So I thought, we've been doing hospitality here since 1973 at Sheffield Hallam. And I thought, okay, so back in 1973, what did the hotel industry look like? Well, the first two pictures we've got at the top are of the Coniston Hotel, which opened in Torquay in 1973. Okay, so when we first started doing hospitality here at Sheffield, that's the type of establishment our graduates were going to. Okay. I'd like to think that perhaps the one in the middle is a little bit more resort-like that we're sort of operating in at the moment. And trying to think about the future, well, what's the future hotel going to look like? Well, it tells me when I search for future hotels or hotels of the future that it could pretty much look something like that. Yeah. Now, predicting the future is really, really difficult, okay? You know, are those going to be the hotels of the future? How revolutionary are they? How different are they? And when we think about it, actually, all of those pictures up there, whether they're from 1973, 40-something years ago, or 2050-plus, 40-plus years into the future, fundamentals are still the same. They still have walls, they still have bedrooms, they still have guests, they still have employees, they still have customer service, they still have food. Okay. So there are fundamentals in place regardless of whether we're delivering 40 years ago or whether we're going to be delivering 40 years in the future. Now, delivering in the future, if we look back to sort of futurologists in the past who have tried to predict what work and employment is going to be like, at the revolution of the computer, by this time now, we were all going to be leisurely doing whatever we want to do, and the computers were going to be doing all the work for us. Okay? Actually, if we think about it, we've got the flip of that. Actually, it's made our working lives more stressful, more on the time, more round the clock. Okay? So predicting the future is really hard. And I think, you know, if we take the nature of the fundamentals, actually, the future changes to work are a bit more evolutionary rather than revolutionary. And I think one of the things that we're doing here is very much working and research with industry and partnering with industry, with the academic teams here, to look at evolutionary changes in the future of work rather than trying to sit back and say we can predict revolutionary changes in the future of work. So, we've got a wide range of work going on here, and I've put some of it on the board. Richard talked about research and doing research in half an hour. Okay, the work that's up here, I'm sure my PhD students and other doctoral students here will tell you, and the academic team will tell you, that it's not the work of half an hour, it's the work of many years, working very hardly with industry and on the work that they're doing. But we have a lot of work done in many different subject areas, so looking at graduate employability, to careers in hospitality, to looking at emotional labour, the role of trade unions in hospitality, which is a strange concept here in the UK, but in South Korea, for example, 85% of workers are in a trade union in the hospitality in Korea. So things that happen across the world are also important for us, and looking at trends and patterns, and working with companies to do that. A lot of the work that's going on has a large number of potential impacts in terms of managing staff, looking at different career patterns and thinking about the future of work in the hospitality industry, which is great. And you can see there that there are, on a quick count, perhaps 13, 14 different countries that the work is operating in. So we have a wide amount of research going on, looking at and trying to help us think about what trends, what patterns are actually happening in industry at the moment, have been happening historically in industry, to help us try and think about what the future of work might be like in hospitality and how, as an academic team, we can help and work with industry to develop workplace practices, policies, recruitment, induction, training, etc., to help with that. Okay. What I want to do today is I want to, Claire is standing very nicely over there waiting, okay, is introduce one of our colleagues here today. Claire is going to talk to you about the future of work based on a project that she's been involved in. I'm trying to think how many years now.
5 years.
So Claire has been working on this project for 5 years now, okay. And it is very much about looking at and mapping trends relating to employment and work and attitudes to work within the hospitality industry. And then looking at the relationship with work and possibly the future of work and how that might impact on the hospitality industry. So I'm going to hand over to Claire, and I'm going to let her talk a little bit more to you about her specific work.
So some of you are probably aware that I have been doing this research for 5 years, and I've talked to you a little bit about it. So I'm coming towards the end of my PhD now, so hopefully 6 years will be it. So my research, as Emma said, is looking at attitudes towards work, and one of the big contributions that is coming out of it is some kind of ideas and thoughts on the future of work. Now today I'm not going to give you the answers. As Emma said, it's very difficult to predict, but I'm going to probably give you more questions than anything. Okay. So a little bit about my research then. So my background is in human resources, but my research kind of encompasses both that and human geography, I would say. So a few years ago I spent 3 months living in Chamonix. Chamonix in France, lovely place to live. And I spoke to people that we would call lifestyle migrants, okay? So people who have chosen to move abroad and create a new life for themselves, in which work plays a big part, okay? So they're trying to find a better lifestyle, okay? Now, today I'm not going to talk to you in detail about those people as such in terms of being lifestyle migrants, but kind of what they're telling us in terms of the future of work. Okay. So to start off with, I wanted to just put this diagram up for you. So this is from an article that was only published this year, so it's very current in terms of what is shaping the future of work. So throughout this presentation, I'm going to try and unpick some reasons why we might be seeing these things and what kind of implications they may have. Okay, so most of us know these, we've discussed these in the past. Okay, so new behaviours shaped by social media, we're living in different ways. Is the first one. The second one, technologies. We've just seen from Richard and Ollie how technology is shaping the way that we view things. Okay, so technology is allowing us, as Emma said, not to remove ourselves from work, but be even more involved in work all of the time. Yeah. The third one, the millennial workforce. Okay, so in just 6 years' time, we expect the workforce to be made up of 50% of millennials, okay? By 2025, we expect 75% of the workforce to be millennials, okay? And this group of workers work in very different ways to what we've seen in the past, okay? So technology, again, plays a big part in that. Everybody's online all of the time now, aren't we? Okay. Mobility, okay, so us being able to work flexibly in different places, again facilitated by that technology. And the fifth one, globalization, okay, so that is breaking down barriers, again enabling some of these things to happen. So these are the five big trends that have been identified. So if we go on to sort of my research and looking at why these things have come about in the first place. Okay, so I've put there changing attitudes, beliefs and values in society. Okay, so not many of you, or some of you may have heard of the Protestant work ethic. Is anybody? No, silence. A few of you, yeah, okay. So the Protestant work ethic was a long time ago, before you were even born, okay, still exists as a concept, but it's where people, they live to work, okay, they were very committed to their work, it gave them, that was their life, okay, whereas now we're much more about lifestyle, okay, rather than just focusing on work, okay. So things have changed. Rather than being dutiful and societal workforce, we're not all going to work, kind of abiding by all of the organisation's kind of particular rules. We want things from them. We don't just comply with organisations. Okay. There's an increased stature on life outside of work. Okay. So we all want that work-life balance, which I'm going to talk about in a moment, and that's quite a difficult concept. We're focused on ourselves and growing ourselves, okay, and almost using organisations in order to develop ourselves, rather than having that commitment to an organisation. Okay. So the fusion of work and leisure often sits quite uneasily together, okay? Because we're wanting more time outside of work, and work is placing more demands on us, especially with the technological developments, and so they don't fuse very well together. Okay. So if we think about work-life balance, and I put a question mark there, in that, can we really achieve a work-life balance? What does work-life balance mean? Okay, so a standard definition is that it's how we choose to prioritise our work, family and individual needs. Okay. But do we always want a complete balance? Okay, like this? Might sometimes in our lives things change and it shifts? Okay. So there's fluidity in our desires for a work-life balance. Okay. As such, the balance is individually constructed. So don't think we can, it's not always going to be the same for everybody all the time. Okay. And the final thing about a work-life balance is that if they work against each other, work and life, if we try to separate them almost, which lots of people try to do, they become in competition with each other. Okay? And it creates an imbalance. If we see them together rather than trying to separate them, we're often able to have more meaningful work and therefore grow as individuals. So what my research has really been kind of bringing out is that actually we don't want to separate our work and our life, but actually see them in tandem as a whole, okay, in order to give us a whole lifestyle. So I just wanted to put up one case study of somebody I interviewed as part of my research. Okay, so the lady in question is called Katie, and she owned a business called Le Delice, okay, in Chamonix. So I just wanted to go through her background and sort of her life in Chamonix and what that can sort of tell us in terms of the future of work. Okay, so she was a UK citizen. She'd done a business and economics degree. Okay, so lots of the people that I looked at in this study were very well-educated, middle-class people. Okay, so we see specific trends in terms of their background. Her family had got a history in hospitality. Her mother was a wedding planner, and also she'd worked in the industry from quite a young age. Okay. So she initially moved to Chamonix just as a break, which lots of people do, okay? So there's lots of discussion in literature at the moment about people extending almost that year out. How many people had a year out at some point? A few of you, yeah? So that people are enjoying that year out experience so much, they're trying to transfer that and make that a permanent place in their life. Okay, so she moved to Chamonix initially as a saisonnière. Okay, she went to ski, enjoy her life, and work a bit to earn some money. Okay, while she was out there, she decided, actually, I'd quite like to go into hospitality as a career, okay, rather than into sort of the financial sector that she first expected to. Okay, so when she made that decision, what happened was we saw what I'd call strategic skill building, okay? So she decided that she needed certain skills in order to own her own business in hospitality. And therefore, she strategically chose jobs and positions in order to build a toolbox of skills that would enable her to do this in the future. So when we talk about people being very individualistic and wanting to find self-fulfillment, okay, we're seeing a trend of people utilising organisations in order to pick up these skills that they need for a future goal. Okay. So eventually she moved full-time and opened her own business. Okay. Now within that business, rather than trying to separate the work and the life, she decided her passion was hospitality, therefore she'd work in hospitality and try and combine the two. Okay, so rather than creating that separation and therefore that kind of them kind of grinding against each other, they were together as one. Okay, she decided to master all aspects of the business, so in a continuation of that skill development, that toolbox of skills, she decided she would be in the kitchen, she would do every aspect of the job role, so she really fully understood the business. Okay. So the lifestyle is key for Katie, but she's very business focused as well. So almost lifestyle entrepreneurial. Okay. And this we're seeing a growing trend in people again wanting to have a better lifestyle, but at the same time being very business focused, okay, and a need for a challenge. So put some little quotes up which are quite nice. So initially she worked, it worked very well because she got to ski all day. So in terms of hospitality, using it in quite a traditional way for a saisonnière to earn money in order to go skiing, okay. Then she'd had this aspiration to have her own bar, but she's always aiming to do more. So this is always this need to grow and continue growing and achieving more things for self-fulfillment. Okay. So what is this telling us then? Okay. So in terms of the future of work, I would question whether we're going to see more of these people that I'm terming lifestylers, okay? Those that are trying to combine their work and life as one. Okay. So they are striving for diversity in their lifestyle and their work, to be challenged, okay? To have a variety of things, okay? So we're really questioning whether work and life can really be separated. And that search for fulfillment is driving people to be continually building their skills. And I think whether you're owning your own business or you're working within an organisation, that's going to be a trend that we see further into the future of people being very driven to build on their skills, to be achieving more. Okay. So as employers, we need to think about that as well. As well as being thinking about it as an individual. Okay. So, I told you I was going to give you some questions. So, key questions I think we need to think about. So, are these lifestylers, are they a growing group of workers, okay, in this post-modernistic society in which we are seeing greater blurring between work and life? So, people are trying to achieve a whole lifestyle. So are we going to see a shrinkage of what we call instrumental workers, people just working for money? Is there a drive for more people, particularly the millennials, to be developing those skills? Okay. And are workers moving away from deferred to instant gratification? So by that, I mean that nowadays we want everything now or yesterday, okay? We don't want to wait for anything, okay? So people are expecting more and more from employers and from their lives. Okay. So in terms of hospitality, how can we apply this? Okay, so my research crosses over into tourism. So one of my questions would be, what does this mean for a tourism destination in terms of we've got an increasing number of skilled migrants moving into an area, and therefore what is that creating in terms of the mixture of employees and individuals in that area? Okay, so in particular in Chamonix, we're seeing more and more entrepreneurialism, okay, because people are driven by their individual desires, okay, for self-fulfillment, but also by a necessity in order to sustain this lifestyle. They're driven to kind of build on their business. Okay, so what does it mean for employers? Okay, so as Emma was saying at the beginning, what do employers need to do in order to entice this new group of people into their workforce? Okay, people who are wanting very specific things, they're wanting to build their skills. Okay, so what does that mean in terms of recruitment, reward? Something to think about. And what does this mean for you as individuals? Okay, so the research is showing that we expect most people in this kind of younger millennial age group to move jobs a number of times, and not just move jobs but move careers. Okay, so we may be in hospitality now, but are you going to go into a different career? We hope not, we hope you'll stay. Okay, but that's what the research is telling us. Okay. Okay, so overall, what does this mean? Okay, so there's a reversal in who is guiding work. So traditionally, we had a very top-down approach where the management was quite authoritarian and they were leading the workforce. Okay, now we're seeing more of a bottom-up approach where individuals are driving the workforce, okay? They are telling employers what they desire, okay? Rather than being dutiful and just saying, yes, I'll do that, they're saying, no, I want this, okay? Employees are bringing new attitudes, as we discussed. Talented people need organizations less than organizations need talented people, okay? So really showing that shift towards the power almost being in the individual's hand. Okay. And organisations are being forced to rethink the meaning of work and how people work. So I've put Virgin there. Did anybody see how Virgin are now offering flexible holidays? That people can take as many holidays as they want, so they're trialling this currently. Okay. So that's really shifting the kind of attitudes towards work and how we think about work. Okay, so it'll be very interesting to see perhaps in a year's time what happens in terms of Virgin's kind of trial of letting people take as much holiday as they wish in a year. Okay, I would suspect most people would feel a duty, some level of commitment to the organisation, and therefore they would just take a reasonable amount of time off. Yeah, so an interesting thing to think about. And then finally, I've just got some questions for you. Okay, so you might want to think about, would you rather work for less money doing something you love, or more money doing something you do not enjoy? Can I have a show of hands? Who would work for less money doing something you love? Okay, very interesting, okay? I can tell you that is an indicator, okay, that you are in this new group of, or this group of people, okay, who are striving for an overall lifestyle in which both work and life are equally as important, okay? If you work for money doing something you do not enjoy, okay, tends to be you just want the money for a lifestyle outside. Okay, so that's interesting. Then the next one, would you prefer a job that provides high income, a job that offers high income? Who's interested in high income? Don't need to be ashamed, that's okay. A job that offers reasonably secure and predictable future, do you think? Yeah? So I think, again, that probably depends. These things will shift dependent on your life stage, okay? And sometimes it's more important to you than others to be in a secure job. A job which is interesting to do. And most people, yeah, okay, again, an indication of, you know, if a job is interesting to do, do we need to be continually challenged and things to continually develop? And again, that's something that employers need to think about. How do you keep a job interesting? Okay. Work which is important and gives you a feeling of accomplishment. Yeah? Again, yeah, these all fall into this category, okay, and things that employers need to think about. Okay, how do we make sure that it gives you accomplishment? A job which gives you a chance to make friends. Yeah. Again, I think it's really dependent on your life stage. So a lot of my research participants, when they first perhaps migrated somewhere and they were a seasonaire just working for a ski season, that making friends was really important because they were out of their comfort zone. Okay. Maybe when you were on placement, some of you, or when you first started a job, that was quite important to you, to make friends, to make you feel comfortable in that environment. Okay. And a job which uses your skills and abilities, finally. Yeah? Okay. So again, it's utilising people to the best of their abilities, okay, and thinking about role placement, perhaps, from an employer's perspective. Okay. So things for both employers and you as individuals to think about in terms of what you want from a job and therefore how that's going to dictate your sort of future of work. Okay. We just wanted to finish on one little quote. How, why, where, and when we work has never been so open to interpretation. Okay. And I think that's really key. It's going to be fluid, flexible, okay, and change as you go along in your life stages. Okay. Okay. So, thank you very much. Any questions, anybody?
Got an observation, Claire. I think one of the things is just the complexity of all of this.
Yeah.
Because there's so many variables and so many circumstances that can influence how you feel or how one feels about work and the scenario. It's trying to get to grips with that, really, because the complexity of it is something that comes across to me.
Yeah, definitely. And as we were saying earlier in the presentation, that we individually construct our attitudes towards work. So as an employer, how do we pull all these things together, as John's saying, in order to be able to kind of put practices in place? Yeah.
And I think that's really key, that individualistic nature of, and that's a really big shift, because previously you could almost predict patterns of work depending upon your social class. So working class people did X, they did that till they retired, etc. Middle class people became accountants, you worked for one company till you got your 25 years golden handshake, you then had your lifestyle when you retired. And now that's changing because individualistically, the way society is running is people are making choices much earlier on at this age about what they want their life to be. They're not taking that deferment till retirement and doing their 30 years before they decide what their lifestyle is to be. They don't buy their cottage in France and go, when I retire, when I'm 65, I'm going to move to France. They go, I'm 22, I've got my degree, I can do what I want, I can work in a hotel in Paris, I can work in a hotel in Spain, I can go and do a year in London, and then I can go and permanently live in France at the age of 25 with all the skills that I need to actually live out there then. So that real individualistic nature and change, you're very right, it's very complex because it's very much down to that individual rather than trends of patterns that we've seen historically.
Anyone else? Richard?
Yeah, just talking about constructing this individually, I wondered if the people that you spoke to had this blurring of work-life from the outset or whether it was something that happened post-migration. As dealing with the reality that they're confronted with. I ask that because, you know, the hospitality industry and operating a hospitality business is notoriously time-consuming and the reality is presumably quite difficult. It's not as sexy as it appears from the outside.
Yeah. I think they were searching for it prior to migrating. And yes, some it became a necessity to sort of combine the two. But for others, it was a very purposeful move to combine. So, for example, some of my other participants are more on the tourism side, where they're perhaps mountain climbers or they're mountain guides. So that was their passion, and so they made their business and their passion as one. So it was a very purposeful move. But yes, there is that kind of tension. Lots of migrants, traditional migration that we see, so perhaps to Spain with retirees, as Emma was saying, they move, they set up a hospitality business because of the low barriers to entry. They think it'll be nice and easy, and then they find that actually it takes up a lot of your time, and perhaps you can't achieve that lifestyle that you wanted in the first place. So there becomes some renegotiation there of the lifestyle. Yeah.
Just one quick question. Is flexibility a luxury? You know, so you're talking about, you know, it's whether you've got the financial freedom, whether you've got your student loan, whether you have a mortgage, it all depends whether you do this. It's wonderful for Virgin to say you take so much holiday, but I'm sure that holiday isn't paid.
Yeah. Yes, it is. And my study is very much focused on middle class, well-educated people who have that affordability, and it's something that we're discussing a lot at the moment, whereas perhaps somebody from a more working class background, can they have that flexibility?
As Claire's indicating, from what we've been looking at, it's a very much a middle-class trend. You're highly educated, you've been supported through university. For a lot of these people, they've often had 8-10 years post-university as well in significant careers, and then taken that step off in their 30s, you know, and made that choice, this isn't what we want, this is actually the lifestyle I want, I've got everything I need, we're doing it now. But it is very much a middle-class, affordability, affluent society trend.
Anybody else?
Okay.
No? All right.
In which case, they look at that spot on 7:30.
Ready for that food.
Well done.